Book 96, page 785.
In The Diary of Fate.
Yes, here it is. Book 96, page 785. The name, Charles Elliot. I'll just leave the book open here for a bit. In a moment, it will be time for the final entry. The man whose life is recorded here will be dead. He is living his last half hour on Earth in a grim, cold room at the state prison, waiting to atone for a crime he did not commit. Murder. No, he did not commit that murder. But only he and I know that. All the others believe the circumstantial evidence against him. And in just a few moments, he will be dead, beyond reprieve. You say fate is against him? That's what he says, too. All last night he sat in his cell and cursed me. Cursed fate for the bonds of circumstance coiled about him, crushing out his very life. Yes. Yes, I wove those bonds. But I had no choice. You see, it was all part of a plan. If you are one of those who think fate is cruel, let me reassure you. In a moment I'll tell you why Charles Elliot is to die for a crime he did not commit. I'll read from his record in The Diary of Fate. I hope you'll understand. It has been wisely said that 'tis the little things that count most. How true that is in the working out of your lives for good or evil. If only you knew how I, Fate, employ little devices to guide you, to alter the courses you have so carefully chosen. A bitter word, a moment's hesitation, a missed appointment, a wet pavement. These are the little things that are my instruments. You do not recognize my hand in these things, and that is well. Yes, Charles Elliot, if it were not for such a little thing, you would not now be walking the long corridor from your cell in the state prison, never to retrace your steps. If you had known, you might recall that evening several months ago when you stood at the intersection near the office building where you worked, waiting for a cab to take you home to your warm bachelor apartment, when you were tired with the delicious tiredness that comes after a day of hard work. And then, finally, a cab did answer the wave of your hand. Remember?
Cab, mister?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, wait a minute. No, I guess you'd better go on. I forgot to get cigarettes.
It's okay. I'll wait for you. If it ain't too long.
No, you'd better not. I'll catch another cab.
Okay. That's the way you want it. Why don't these guys make up their mind?
That was a little thing, wasn't it, Elliot? A forgotten package of cigarettes, sending the cab away without you. Everything might have been all right if only you had the cigarettes or taken the cab. But you didn't, because I was there directing you. Instead, you looked around you, and there was a cocktail lounge bright with flashing colored signs right behind you. So you turned and walked across the sidewalk through the rain. And in a moment, you were in the pleasant warmth of the place, standing before one of those machines where you buy cigarettes. But then another little thing happened. That's right. You didn't have the right change. Oh, well, the man behind the bar would give it to you.
Pardon me.
Yes, sir. What'll it be tonight?
Nothing to drink, thanks. I just like to get change for the cigarette machine.
Sure. 2 dimes and a nickel, I'll be okay?
Yeah, fine, thanks.
And then, while you were waiting for your change, the man sitting on the stool next to you, a stoutish, jovial, well-dressed fellow, began talking to you. Now the stage was almost set.
How about a little drink, friend, huh?
No, thanks, not thanks.
Oh, I'd sure like to buy you one.
No, thanks, I really don't care.
Oh, don't take me wrong. I'm just sort of celebrating today. Big day for me.
Oh?
Yes, sir. In just 2 hours and 10 minutes from now, I'm going to be a married man. How do you like that?
Well, that's fine. Congratulations.
Oh, thanks, my friend. You married?
No, not yet.
Oh, you ought to be. I figure every fellow ought to get married.
Yes, I guess you're right at that.
Yeah, believe me, brother, I've got the best girl in the...
thanks for the change.
It's all right.
Hey, bartender, give this gentleman a drink.
No, really.
Look, one little drink isn't going to hurt anybody. I'm not getting out of line, am I? I'm being polite.
Yes, of course. But you see,
Well, come on, you be polite, too, and have just one drink with me to help celebrate. Come on.
But don't you think you
can... I know what you're going to say. Yes, sir, you're right, too. I've had just about enough. That's right. No more for me, but you've got to have one.
Okay. Just one.
Good.
What'll it be, mister?
Well, let's see. I think I'll have a small glass of port.
Right.
Now, that's more like it, my friend. By the way, my name's Moran.
Well, glad to know you, Mr. Moran.
Glad to know you, too.
My name's Elliot.
Well, hi there. Well, by golly, Charlie, we'll have to... here's your drink.
Here you are. That'll be 30 cents.
Here you are, bartender. This is on me.
Say, you don't happen to have anything smaller than a 20, do you?
Nope, it's the smallest I've got. See? Whole billfold full of
them. Well, I guess I can change it, all right.
Say, that's a lot of money to be carrying around with you, Miss Moran.
Well, you see, Evelyn and I are going on a little honeymoon. We're leaving right after we get married tonight. So I thought I'd better take plenty with me. A fella never knows what might happen on a honeymoon.
Yeah, that's right. Well, thanks for the drink, and here's congratulations again.
Thanks a lot. Drink hearty, Charlie. Drink hearty, old man.
So you drank a toast with Moran and stood there with him for a while talking, while he told you about Evelyn, the girl he was going to marry that evening. And finally, when it was time for him to go, because he had a heavy traveling bag and several bulky packages, you offered to help him carry them to the house in the next block. He was just a little unsteady on his feet. And you were both puffing a little when you arrived at her apartment because you'd walked up to the second floor without waiting for the elevator. Moran's arms were full, so you rang the bell for him.
I guess she hasn't got home yet, Charlie.
Yeah, it looks that way, doesn't it?
She said she might have to work a little late tonight getting things cleaned up so we can go away, you know. Mm-hmm. Oh, boy. Whew. That air sure hit me. I can almost see two of you now. It's a good thing I've got a key.
Yeah.
Say, Charlie, look in my side coat pocket there, will you? I think that's where I left it.
In here?
Yeah. You find it?
Yeah, his key. This it?
That's right. Now, if you'll open the door for me, I'd sure appreciate it.
Of course. Just a second. There we are.
Yeah, swell. And you can just stack that stuff you've got on top of these packages I've got, and I'll be all set.
All right. Be careful. Don't drop it.
No, don't worry. I won't. Nah, that's a ticket.
And I'll leave the key in the door for you.
Yeah, I'll get it later. Well, Charlie, I sure want to thank you. I want to thank you for giving me a lift with all this stuff. Big help.
Not at all.
And remember what I told you. Soon as me and Evelyn get settled, you've got to come and see us.
That's today, Mr. Moran.
Okay.
Sure. Well, I guess I better be running along.
Yeah,
you
go right
ahead. Best of luck to you and the girlfriend.
Oh, thanks. And thanks again for all your help, Charlie. I'll be seeing you soon.
And then, remember, you walked away down the deep carpeted hallway to the stairs. But you'd gone only a little way when... No mistaking that hollow metallic sound, was there? A gunshot. And it seemed to come from the apartment Moran had just entered. For a moment, you were frozen. And you whirled and ran back. The door was closed and you pounded on it.
Moran, open up, Moran!
There was only silence. You looked down. The key was still in the lock where you had left it. The apartment was in darkness. But in the light from the hall, you could see the soles of a man's shoes at your feet. Grotesquely awkward and twisted, you reached for the light switch.
Moran.
Already a patch of blood is spreading from under Moran's crumpled body, staining the bright paper on the wedding packages. You pull your eyes away from the sight, and there it is, lying in a doorway across the room, the gun. It glitters dully, evilly, and then there is a sound. Your ears strain to catch it, identify it. From somewhere, you hear a door closed, a key turned. Without thinking, you run toward the sound. Without thinking, you scoop up the pistol as you run. But in the kitchen, the rear door of the apartment is locked, and there is no key. It is useless. The killer is gone. Hurrying back to the living room, you stop just short inside. Across the room in the hall doorway, a girl stares fixedly at Moran's body. And there's an almost idiotic look about her eyes and mouth. There's a long moment before she is aware of you standing there. And another instant before she screams and falls against the door casing. After that, so many things happen so quickly. Neighbors crowding in the doorway to gape at the body. A kindly, sympathetic woman reviving Evelyn on a couch. The assistant manager of the apartment house bustling about aimlessly, importantly. Finally, the police. Examining, searching, talking in low tones. Taking fingerprints all so slowly, methodically, with such brutal calm. And then they came to you, Elliot. You noticed most of all the oiliness of the plump face and the pores around the nose of the detective as he talked.
And you say you never knew this Moran before you met him down the street in a bar?
That's right. You see, I just went into the place to get some cigarettes and...
Yeah, I know. You told me all about that. What I want to know is, why did you come up to this young woman's apartment with him if you weren't a friend of his?
Well, I
saw him. I saw him.
Yes?
I wanted to help him, that's all. You see, he had a lot of things to carry, and it was raining, and he was... Well, he had a few drinks and...
So he looked like a pushover to you, huh?
What?
Do you have a permit to carry that gun?
But that isn't my gun. It was lying on the floor right in the doorway when I came into the apartment. Whoever shot Moran probably threw it there, and I guess he ran out the back door through the kitchen.
That back door is locked.
Well, I guess you're right. That's why I couldn't follow the murderer when I ran after him. It's an old-fashioned lock. Any passkey would open it. He must have had one.
Too bad you didn't remember to bring one with you, isn't it?
But I tell you, I was only trying to help Moran. I don't know anything about this. I let him in the door and...
Hold it, Elliot. Yeah, Jeff?
Everything checks, Lieutenant. Front door key, the gun, the door knobs, front and back, all the same.
Any other prints on the gun?
No, nothing but his.
Yeah. I'll have the assistant manager get another apartment for this girl tonight and someone to stay with her. I'm going back to the office.
Okay, Lieutenant.
Put on your coat, kid. You'd better come along with me.
Well, certainly, Lieutenant. I'll be glad to do anything I can to help you get this straightened out.
I think you can help a lot. When you get ready to tell us why you murdered Moran.
A strange turn of events, wasn't it, Elliot? You see what I meant about that package of cigarettes and the taxi? And the lack of correct change in your pockets? All little things, of course. But they were the steps that led to a charge of murder against you. A murder that you and I know you did not commit. I'd like to go over the trial with you in just a moment. While there is still time. While they are preparing you for the final step in that gray room at the prison. The last entry about you in the Diary of Fate. It was tragic for you, Elliot, that all the little pieces fitted together so nicely when the prosecution called witnesses to testify against you. There was the bartender from the cocktail lounge. Remember him?
And can you swear, Mr. Evans, that you saw the defendant in the place of business where you are employed on the night Joseph Moran was murdered?
Sure. He came in about 6:30, acted like he was stalling around, waiting for something.
What gave you that impression, Mr. Evans?
Well, he comes up to the bar and asks me for some change for the cigarette machine. But after I give it to him, he didn't buy no cigarettes.
I see. Now, what happened after you gave him the change?
Well, Moran is sitting there at the bar minding his own business. Well, Elliot starts talking to him. And when I come back with a change, he talked Moran into buying him a drink.
Now, did you have occasion to see any money on Mr. Moran's person?
I sure did. When Moran pays for Elliot's drink, I had to crack a 20 for him. He had a whole wallet full of big bills. He showed them to me.
Did the defendant also see that money?
Sure, he's sitting right there looking at it.
Now, one more thing, Mr. Evans. Did you see Mr. Moran leave the premises?
Yes, sir, I did. Him and Elliot went out together.
Thank you, Mr. Evans. That will be all.
You could see that the bartender's evidence with its half-truths had influenced the jury when you looked at their impassive faces, couldn't you, Elliot? Perhaps later you could convince them that he was wrong when the time came. But now they were bringing Evelyn to the stand. Evelyn Bronson, the pretty girl who was to have married Joseph Moran that fateful night. She was calmer than when you last saw her in that blood-stained apartment. But in her strained eyes, there was hate for you, as she testified.
Now, Miss Bronson, tell us as simply as you can just what happened and what you saw that night.
Mr. Moran and I were to have been married in my apartment at 8:00 that evening. I'd worked later than usual at the office, getting everything in order so that we could go away for a week on our honeymoon.
Yes?
I got home a few minutes after 7. Joseph had planned to be there waiting for me. But the door of my apartment was open, and he was lying there, dead.
I'm sorry, Miss Bronson, I'm sorry, but will you please tell the court what else you saw?
I saw him standing there with a gun in his hand. Charles Elliott killed Joseph.
That is all for now, Miss Bronson.
There was hate in Evelyn Bronson's eyes when she accused you. And there was growing conviction in the eyes of the jury after that, too. Later, the detective lieutenant who arrested you testified.
Please tell the court in detail the findings of the police investigators in this case, Lieutenant.
Well, our ballistic test proved that the shot that killed Moran was fired from the same spot where Elliot was standing when Miss Bronson entered the apartment.
Now, was the gun used in the shooting the same one you found in the defendant's possession at the scene of the crime?
Exactly the same. The markings on the bullet taken from the body matched test bullets fired from that gun.
You checked the apartment thoroughly for fingerprints?
Yes, sir. The only fingerprints found on the gun were Elliot's. Also, his fingerprints appeared on the key used to open the front door and on the doorknob, as well as on the light switch. They was also on the knob of the door leading from the kitchen to the back stairway of the building.
And that stairway leads to an alley in the rear of the premises.
Yes, sir.
Now, Lieutenant, what was the conclusion of the police department as to the manner of this killing?
Well, a reconstruction of the case shows that the defendant met the deceased in a public place, accompanied him to the scene of the crime, opened the door of the apartment, turned on the light, and preceded him into the apartment. Then, from across the room, the defendant fired a bullet at the deceased, striking him in the head and killing him.
And considering the large sum of money the deceased was carrying, more than $3,000, would you say that the motive of that killing was robbery, Lieutenant?
Objection, Your Honor.
Objection sustained.
That will be all, Lieutenant.
There were others against you, too, Elliot. Each of them adding a strand to the net that tightened around you as the trial went on. The newspapers called you the honeymoon killer. Psychiatrists were called in, and they went away shaking their heads, saying you were easily capable of murder. No. No, you weren't insane. But if the provocation were sufficient, you would kill. And there was provocation in Moran's wallet that night. Over $3,000 in cash. Witnesses in your behalf were few. And there was so little they could tell the court about you. You did your work at the office well, but your salary was small, and you seldom joined in gay times with others. No one knew you intimately. That kind of testimony was more damaging than helpful. And the district attorney used it to advantage when he summed up the state's case to the jury.
And the state has proved, beyond a reasonable doubt, that the defendant, Charles Elliott, willfully, and with the express purpose of committing armed robbery, followed Joseph Moran to the Old English Tavern, where he plied him with liquor. Later, pretending to be helpful to the deceased, he accompanied him to the scene of the crime. There, he shot Joseph Moran in cold blood, ladies and gentlemen. There, he murdered an innocent man. 1 hour before, that man was to have been joined in wedlock with this charming girl. You have heard the testimony of witnesses. You have heard the defendant himself admit that he knew Joseph Moran was carrying a large sum of money, that he drank with him, that he went with him to that apartment. His fingerprints tell the rest of the story. How he tried to escape by the kitchen door when he heard someone approaching, and before he could rob his dead victim. But there, ladies and gentlemen, is where fate stepped in. That door was locked. Not with a modern lock, which could be easily opened from the inside, but with a lock that required a key. And the key was missing. Fate had once more turned the tables on a calculating, cold-blooded killer. A man no one in this court has vouched for. Now, you have heard a fair trial, ladies and gentlemen. You have heard all the testimony. I leave this case in your hands. I ask only that you render a fair, a just verdict. And there can be only one verdict. Guilty, without recommendation. Oh. Thank you.
And then came the hours of waiting while the jury deliberated. While you waited in your cell as the hours dragged. The first time you were stricken with hopelessness. For the first time you cursed fate.
If only I hadn't gone into that bar that night. If only I hadn't. Why did fate have to play a trick like that on me?
No. Yes, Charles. At last you blamed me, didn't you? I knew that you would. Everyone does. And when the jury returned the verdict next day, your heart turned bitter, and all hope left you.
Your Honor, it is the judgment of this jury that the defendant, Charles Elliott, is guilty, without recommendation.
Without recommendation. The death penalty. Since that morning, you have paced your solitary cell in state prison, or sat with your head in your hands, by turns railing at me, or entreating me to help you, calling on fate to intervene, to save you from the inevitable. But there was nothing I could do. Secretly, you knew it, too. Fate is inexorable. And now the plan is fulfilled, complete. A moment ago, the lights in the prison dimmed for an instant. And now Charles Elliott is dead, in atonement for a crime he did not commit. Lest any mortal think that fate is cruel, unmindful of human rights, in all fairness, I must add the reason for your death as I write the final entry on your page in my diary. In a moment when I have written, I will read that entry. Charles Elliott is dead. To the end, he protested his innocence in the murder of Joseph Moran, and he was right in that. But no man can forever escape the reaping of his sowing. Last night, while his sands were swiftly running out, I was with him in his cell. In those dark midnight hours, Charles came to know the real meaning of fate. To him, it was supremely ironical.
What a joke. What a colossal joke.
Yes, Charles, a ghastly joke, isn't it? And no one but you and I will ever appreciate it. Eugene is dead, and Catherine's heart will heal in time. It is better to leave matters as they are. That is part of the plan, too.
Eugene. Catherine. Oh, what a fool I was. What a fool.
You've tried not to think of Eugene since that day, haven't you, Charles? Lieutenant Eugene Harvey, killed by enemy action, Saipan, 1945. He was your best friend, or thought he was. But he didn't know the jealousies that burned in your soul. You always envied him, Charles, even when you were schoolboys together. And when Catherine chose him instead of you, it rankled your very soul. But you didn't think of murder. Not until that day on Saipan, did you? Even in the service, you were jealous of him, weren't you? He was Lieutenant Eugene Harvey. You were Private Charles Elliott. That hurt, too, didn't it? And then, that day you were moving up. It was so easy for you. Eugene was ahead. There were just the two of you on that trail. And then you saw the Japanese rifle lying in the grass. It was loaded. It was all so easy, so plausible. A Jap sniper had killed Eugene. You told that story very well, Charles, and they believed you. Why not? He was your friend, wasn't he? All this time you thought you were safe, Charles, and you were. But I was waiting for the right time. Joseph Moran was to die. There was a reason for that, too. It was my opportunity to complete the plan I had for you. That's why you didn't have cigarettes that rainy night. Why you sent the cab away. Why you didn't have the correct change for the cigarette machine. Why you talked with Moran at the bar. And why everyone believed the circumstantial evidence against you. And now, at last, you have learned there is no escaping fate, haven't you, Charles? And so Charles Elliott is dead. Not for the killing of Joseph Moran, but for the murder of his friend, Eugene Harvey. Justice has been served. You wonder about Joseph Moran and the man who did kill him? And perhaps why Eugene Harvey died so fruitlessly? Their pages are in my diary, too. And when the time comes, I'll tell you about them. Remember, that there is a page for you in the Diary of Fate.
Produced by Larry Finley, Diary of Fate is a Finley transcription brought to you from Hollywood.